Thanks very much, John. If you can't get enough of conferences, I'll put a little flyer for the British Cartographic Conference in September, just in the middle of the row. So if anybody's very keen, have a look at that, because I'm as interested in mapping as I am in censuses. Now, what I want to try and get over in the next 20 minutes is the degree to which we can underestimate a census. And the way in which I've done this is that I haven't looked at the 2011 census until this year. So I've looked this year at the 2011 census, not out of design, out of accident, really. And it's really interesting to see what it tells, at least me, that I thought I knew, but is different. So it's a practical experiment in trying to see what the general value of a census is, rather than the kind of individual projects that we're all interested in. I put these four things up not to try to show off, but rather as lament. These are all four things that Bethel and I were involved with over the last decade or so, and almost none of them can now be done. The bankrupt Britain Atlas used a series of data which the new Labour government, in a sense, made available. Data on how much people were being paid in each local authority sector, by whether they're self-employed and so on. Data on how much we were polluting. A huge amount of data. The majority of the maps in that atlas can no longer be updated because the data has been cut. You can't find out any of these things anymore. And that was non-census data. The second one, Identity in Britain, which is a very detailed look at the census from the point of view of different age groups, would be very hard to do today because it can only really be done in a university. And in universities, people are now required to do things which are seen of greater value than that, which can go into the ref. So I doubt you'll see anything like Identity in Britain being produced again, the way things are going. I could be wrong, but I suspect that that kind of publication will be just be seen as too elaborate when you should be trying to get your four-star internationally brilliant papers to show you've changed the world, whatever complete and utter rubbish the next ref will use to try to describe the kind of things we do. The third one, Change in the UK, that was a project done with John as well as others here, which was the BBC. And there is no way the BBC will be funding even the few thousand pounds they gave us to help us do this in future, because, of course, the BBC are now helping to pay the licence fee for pensioners, as it's put, or as you should really put it, receiving another cut of 20% in their funding. So those kind of public uses this kind of data are decreasing. And lastly, People and Place is a very old-fashioned kind of product, a basic census atlas. This is what I'm going to be showing you some drafts of early maps of. And it's just what the census shows you if you map simple percentages by area. It was first done by Ray Forrest and David Gordon in the University of Bristol, probably with the 81 census, I think, in black and white and GIMS for the oldies. Bethan and I are doing it now. The main reason we're doing it now is we don't think anybody else has done it. We thought somebody just would. We thought we were a bit late. But we don't think anybody else has done this. People have done some interesting things, automated mapping. Alex has done up in Liverpool of very data at very small levels, but just the basic what does the census show us maps being brought together in a single social atlas of Britain. I may have missed it, and I really want to know now from you if I have, but I have a horrible feeling that for many reasons, one of which is the declining number of quantitative geographers in the country, this kind of thing is going away and it's problematic. I won't read any of this out, just to say that we are in another period of cuts of official statisticians. There was a series of these cuts. You might know the one that came after 1979, but there were earlier cuts. And there's no reason to think that the cuts have yet ended. I'll try not to be any more pessimistic than this. But we do need to know what it is we are losing and have lost, and what it is we won't know in the future if things are not reversed. In each case of those cuts in the past, they were reversed. And then statistics actually became more interesting because you can get new things. I apologise for the fact you can't read the words on this map. You will be able to on the next one. This is an old-fashioned cartogram drawn with hexagons by hand. And this is the more modern kind of cartogram, and this is the one that Bethany and I will be using to look at the 2011 census, and that changed from 2001. Because in a way, the one thing a census tells you that's interesting is what has changed. The static picture in a census isn't that exciting because it's rather like the static picture that you saw before. So I'm going to show you some maps of change from the past using that cartogram, and next to it, this one. Here's one where you can actually read the words if you've got very good eyesight. The South has grown, of course. We've gone up to 63.5 million people. And so it's actually bulging and getting bigger in the South. We're in the middle of the powerhouse. What's happening, in case you don't know economic policy in Britain, is the Chancellor has decided that there's not enough competition in the country, so he's creating a second city to rival London, and you're in the centre of it. And it's up here. And this big blob up here is Sheffield. And you get an idea of how the mapping works. Everywhere touches where it should touch. If you're very able, you can memorise that map now and the rest of the talk will make sense to you. Okay. Just some really basic things. Women. Women and men. After the 2001 census, we discovered that the number of women was going down on the south coast. These are the green areas, as a proportion of the population, because men were beginning to age as well, so you're getting more men over age 90 and so on. We kind of know all of that, and you might think, oh, you could tell that without a census. This is what 2011 tells us. It tells us that the proportion of women has increased in the home counties, and particularly in places like Reading and Slough. And that just wasn't happening before. You can then use the census to find out why, what's going on, who are these people. But population data from ONS mid-year estimates isn't of high enough quality to see subtle things like the changing percentage of just men and women. And it's not until you map it that you begin to see that there's a pattern going on there. And something interesting is happening, which is different. I mustn't use up my time, so I'll just zoom through many of these. Without a census, you know things, you know, such as how many babies there are, and you can get all excited. We're going to get little kiddies who are aged 18 who are born, when, around about 1997? They'll all be getting their A-level results in August. The newspaper headlines will be, biggest increase in children going to university ever. That headline will be on the 13th or 14th. Possibly also with biggest increase in social mobility ever. A large part of that reason, of course, is that the birth cohort's falling. So the bums on seats are staying the same. In fact, the bums on seats are getting bigger because universities are building lecture theatres like anything because there's a free-for-all. You can take any number of kids you want. But without a census, you can't work out what's been going on and who's been going where. You're just stuck with things like this. Now, with a census, this is 2011. I won't talk about the past, but that's what we knew and this is what we know now. We don't even need to compare 2011 to 2001 to see a change. This is 3 to 17-year-olds, and you'll see that they're decreasing in these areas. They're decreasing in the northern cities and rising in these areas. Let's go forward to the next age group, 18 to 20. And the 18 to 20-year-olds are disappearing from the home counties in West London, an increasing in Sheffield, an increasing in Manchester, an increasing in Newcastle. So that was the rise in going to universities, another big rise of going to universities, and a big increase up to 2011 in people from the affluent parts of Britain going north. And we know from other sources, but without a census we'll not get to see it, that since they lifted the cap and you can get in to any university with AAB and then ABB and this year with whatever you want, that pattern, it is, I'll try not to talk, I've been working on university numbers the last 2 days. That pattern is going to change again. That is the pattern of the success of provincial universities. That's what you're seeing there. And, of course, immigration from overseas, which has been incredible. But you need another census to be able to see how that changed. The over 90s, I've missed out all the other age groups because I know I don't have enough time. The over 90s are increasing in number near me in Oxfordshire. It's a bit of a shock to do a talk in a rural village hall in Oxfordshire and suddenly Peter Jay turns up from his nursing home. And another, you'd be amazed. Sorry, you have to be my age to know who enough Peter Jay was. But this part of the Cotswolds, this part of Jeremy Clarkson country, isn't just full of people who fix newspaper stories and the rest of it. It's also full of an increasing number of very affluent elderly retirees who've decided they want to be there in other places. Now, you might say, oh, we could do that with other data, but you can't then work out whether they're affluent or not. You can't work out the other sides of it. Other things that surprise me, won't surprise many of you, of course, because you're looking at this, but the Buddhists slowly and gradually taking over. It'll take them another millennium before they're there, but the Buddhists are certainly on the rise. Nobody worries about the Buddhists, but the suburbanisation of Caribbean-born, we would have never predicted in the 70s or 80s that you would have seen a suburbanisation of the people who are born in the Caribbean out to other parts of London. And they're being pushed out. The big, big story of the 2011 census is immigration. In a way, I'm really quite glad that by chance Bethan and I didn't get to write anything on the census in the last 2 years, given the politics of the last 2 years, because the big story is lots more people have turned up from lots of other places, and they've really squeezed into London. And in the very middle of London, Westminster, Kensington and Chelsea is quite dramatic in terms of how many Russians and Saudis and other people have just arrived and who they've pushed out. In the old days, it was poor immigrants coming in who pushed people out and they came into poor areas. Now it's rich immigrants coming into rich areas who are pushing the not quite so rich out. But again, you need a census to see that. This is what you have without a census. These are the ONS estimates of people in the country from various countries and the increases. Just an aside, I was told by somebody from Germany recently how lucky we were because we got all the really skilled people from Poland by opening up first, but I won't say anything else. But of course, the census lets us see where people have gone. The census also lets us keep our grasp on reality. These maps here are showing you the huge increase in the English in Wales and Scotland yet again. Everybody is moving further as they age. So it's not just the more people are coming here, more of us are going there, and more of us are going to Wales and Scotland. And the census lets you look at everything. It stops you just concentrating on one group. You don't have an excuse for the census to say, I'm just going to look at Polish people. You have to look at other people who moved in. Here's an image which we haven't updated yet. This is data from the censuses from 1841 all the way through. There's some very dodgy 2006 data at the end there. And the scale, obviously, the X scale should be moved slightly. So it's not a falling down, it's an increase. Only the census will let us update this to see how it is altering. We have a guess about where it's going. But also you need the censuses all the way back to tell you this isn't actually something very new. This has been happening since at least 1951. It's an increase of a trend to have more people in this country born in other countries and more of a variety of other countries. Things I haven't noticed picked up that surprised me from the 2011 census. The huge increase in people living in Britain who are born in the Indian subcontinent. There's been very little comment about that. It's quite an incredible rise, and you can see the rise there, and you can read the percentages. This is all politically fraught, this area, so in often it's quite nice when there isn't much comment on various things the census showed. I can remember back, was it 91 we first asked ethnicity? Was that the first time? People kind of deciding not to say very much about mixed ethnicity at all, which was increasing more, partly out of fear that there would be negative newspaper comment about mixed ethnicity, Now you wouldn't get any negative newspaper comment about mixed ethnicity. It's easy to forget how different the recent past was. I've got friends who are school teachers who had to teach under Clause 28. Now we have a census which asks people how they became to be a partner of somebody of the same sex as themselves. Other changes that you will know but are just interesting. It's not all a case of more people coming in. It's a case of older groups being squeezed out. It's a changing pattern to what it means to be in Britain and what the kind of multi-ethnic dimension of Britain is. Unbelievable changes in where graduates are going and have been going. Every sentence since 1971, a high proportion of people have a degree, and a high proportion of those with a degree try to move into London. 90% of the new full-time jobs are in London. So you end up with this green area here in the middle where 30 to 55% of everybody has a degree. The real question is, what's your second or third degree in? Not what your first degree is in. And then the sentence for the first time asks us, who hasn't got a passport? And we find a wonderful correlation with UKIP voting. People who've never been abroad. And here's the increase. This is the continued increase in people with university degrees. It's going on at a staggering rate, but it takes a census. This is Edinburgh, by the way, to tell you where you've gone. Let's go forward a little. The census is the only source where people are actually asked how many hours they work rather than an employer saying what it is. And, of course, some people work for more than one employer. In the very heart of London, and you've got to remember this is 2 years after the crash, you still have rising numbers of people working over 48, 49 hours a week in the middle of London. Those kind of drop-through-you-die banking jobs are not going away. And although we had an overall decrease between 2001 and 2011, that's the national rate of people working very long hours again. It's going up again. Here's one casualty, I think, of the economic crash. This is the fall in people whose job title was manager or director or senior official between 2001 and 2011. And the falls are the kind of golden crescent to the west of London. There really was a slight all in it together. Not even a slight, one big enough to alter your census maps of a decade of change. People with very well-paid jobs did lose their jobs. And my guess is that loss has to be in the years immediately after the financial crash. But we need other data to be able to tell that. Here's some more on occupation. I'll just tell you most interesting one maybe. People working in admin and secretarial jobs. You can see the huge brown decrease in the southeast of England. Part of an overall decrease which continues. But again, it was who was laid off first. The very first layoffs, if you can remember 2008, were actually the cleaners in the banks, but then other people were. And you're seeing part of that social history etched into the country through the census data. But you're having to make guesses from other data and other things as to quite why it happened as it did. Despite all of that, the number of people working in banking and finance actually grew between 2001 and 2011 because we had the most almighty bailout in history. That's why the banking sector doesn't look like the mining sector between 81 and 91, which is a very different map of jobs. But you're still seeing a big increase in people working in banking. And here, very different, is the huge drop in people working as estate agents between 2001 and 2011. And I needed to see that to tell me I've made a mistake over the last few years, because I've been waxing lyrical about how 3 years ago, one in four new jobs were estate agents, and 2 years ago, one in three new jobs were estate agents. And wasn't this terrible? What I hadn't realised is that all the estate agents had been laid off before. So it's not that hard for there to have been these incredible rises in young people working in estate agency with the new boom in the southeast of England. But without seeing the backdrop, without seeing the decadal change in that industry, you can look at more recent figures and think that they are telling you more than they actually are, or you just get the context wrong without a census. And of course you don't look at everything else you should be looking at, because everything affects everything else in the social geography of Britain. 2001-2011, increasing number of married couples in central London and other parts of Britain who are childless. This is a new rise. And my immediate reaction to seeing this was to think, oh, London's getting too expensive for people to have kids. They're getting married, but they're in a one-bed flat in, I don't know, somewhere like Dalston Junction, that used to be very, very cheap. And that one-bed flat now costs them £350,000, and they really can't have a kid in a one-bedroom flat. And so that's why we're getting more married couples in London, in particular, without children. These ones on the coast will be older married couples whose children have left. But then I looked at this and actually found that there was a rise in marriage in the affluent parts of London. That little belt from the centre, Westminster, Kensington, Chelsea, down to Fulham. More people have got married. I then began to get suspicious and wonder whether there's an increase in people getting married to help people get into the country, but I'll not go any further on that. And of course, that's no use unless you're earning £18,000 a year. It won't get you into the country getting married anymore anyway. Back in 1991... the census showed that London was the only place where a majority of people between 16 and, I think it was 90, were not married. Marriage was as common everywhere else. That really has changed. Most care and retirement homes, of course, are still found on the south coast, but it's on the south coast that they've been closing the most, or other things have been happening. And here's that increase, if the mouse is moving there. There's Oxford. You're absolutely surrounded by increase in retirement homes for the fairly affluent. And this is my last slide. I'll just show you just two other things that I wouldn't have known if I hadn't drawn these maps. These are very simple maps. This is not advanced quantitative methods that would get you an ESRC grant to do a PhD studentship. This is just percentages and taking them away. We know that there's been an increase in cycling in London. Right? You can't stop and not hear about the increase in cycling in London. You might know there's been a little one in Cambridge, a bit less in Oxford because we're already doing quite well, a bit of an increase in cycling in Brighton, and a bit in Bristol that goes on endlessly about how it's now a cycle city. What you wouldn't know is all those red areas. These are areas where fewer and fewer people are cycling. In general, fewer people in Britain are cycling, and they're mainly cycling in places where they're not having to cycle because finally they've got a car, because the country is so different. So until I saw that map, I'd been celebrating a slow and steady move to increase cycling in the country, not realising that small reductions in many other places far outweigh the increase in a few civil servants cycling in Whitehall. So if you want to reduce our carbon footprint, we're going to have to do a lot more than we're already doing. And my last one is people with two or more cars, two, three or four cars. Of course, it's decreased in London because more and more people are squeezed into London. You really can't afford car parking spaces. But it's the increase, particularly the increase in the Welsh Valleys. And again, that's a kind of catch-up. Finally, a family in the Welsh Valleys can have a car for him and a car for her, which happened in the 1980s in other parts of the country. And these are just a selection of things that a geek like me, who tries to keep abreast of changes, just wouldn't know without a census. A cut-down census for 2021 won't show us any of these things. All the other statistics that we routinely collect don't help us see this. We need a census of at least the quality that we have at the moment to be able to see it, but we also just need some more people describing some of the very basic things that the census tells us. The biggest group who used to do this, and did it after 2001, were local authority officers in local authority districts. They produced their little census atlases of Leicestershire and of Manchester and so on, and they were very, very good. almost all of those jobs are gone. Those people are no longer employed. I've seen very little since 2011 being done by local government about the census, because we're moving away from an era where you plan, where you know, into a new era. In my hometown, now my new hometown, they've worked out that we have lots of children. We've only just worked out we've had lots of children. In fact, we've got so many children that we're going to need a new secondary school. All right? We've got about 1,200 too many children coming through the primary schools. What's going to happen? All the secondary schools of Oxfordshire are academies. Nobody's planning. So there are two bids in for a new free school to open in 2017. No site, no land, no looking ahead. This is the kind of mess you get if you don't watch what is happening to your society and begin to plan for it and work out the implications of moving the affluent elderly to Oxfordshire when there's going to be nobody to change their catheters in about 5 years' time there. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, Danny. I thought you weren't going to end on a pessimistic note. And I don't think there is anybody else producing a social atlas other than Alex, who's sort of online. Others will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you will go ahead with that project. Fascinating compendium of maps. Thanks very much indeed. We have best part of 5 minutes for some questions to Danny, if there are. Here's your opportunity, folks. Yes.
The new one is done using software from an algorithm possibly called Gassner and Newman. You can run it through Scapetoad, I think. I'm looking at John. We had to find somebody competent, essentially. He's not got to my age anymore.
You can do it in ArcGIS.
You can do it in ArcGIS now. Great, thank you. So it is a public domain algorithm to make it. But also we'll put the shapefiles up. And we put the shapefiles from 2001 up. And the chief medical officer now uses them. So they're finally getting in and being used. The first person who said this should be used for census mapping was somebody called John Craig, way back, who did them for the 1971 census. But they're available, and you can make your own, or just ask us and you can have them. The hexagons were partly done by computer, but largely by hand. And I did the hexagons while trying to get my newborn son to go to sleep 14 years ago. So if there are errors in the hexagons, it's all his fault.
I do like them, these cartograms, David. I did spend quite a lot of time trying to work out where Leeds was.
Yes, you do have to. You're big. You're up here.
Oh, that's Leeds.
It's enormous. Leeds is enormous. That's Brad. That's Bradford next to you.
I just think it'd be great if there was some mechanism. Maybe it has to be interactive web mapping, sort of thing, when you can run the cursor over and actually see where some of these places are. But
you can do that. I mean, the other thing that will happen in the next 5 years is you'll have it so that you go from a normal map to this and back in your screen, so it moves, and people really like that because it's a bit more exciting as well. So it makes data look much more exciting than it really is.
I was just going to say, on cartograms, I find if you put the motorway network on, it really helps people cue where places are.
That's a brilliant suggestion, and I'm going to put that to Bethan. Because the great thing on these that we couldn't do before, of course, the motorway network connects up properly.
So
we can put it on. Not so good for Sheffield, which just has one going past it and no decent ring road.
Chris?
A comment on the thing I find Gaston Newman cartographs, especially when you do London. London's now got so much that the area surrounding London directly seems to basically shrink.
Yeah.
And get very difficult to interpret. Some of the things the maps you were showing, some of the stuff that's going on in the southeast, around the M25, those areas, there's actually interesting things happening that you can't see. That's clearly because London masks it.
Yeah.
Is it potentially worth taking London out of it and then doing the rest of the UK without London as a cast ground to see. Because obviously areas that seem smaller and become bigger and be an interesting pattern to see what it looks like, but to have London as a separate bit on the map.
I'd never thought of doing that before, and it is interesting. You're right. I mean, for mapping elections, these maps are tricky because they stretch the home county constituencies. So you go back to hexagons again for elections. It does. You're right. It does have that effect, but the area that the home counties are getting is still the same. My argument for keeping it at the moment is that if you are in a little town, let's say Oxford, a lot of what's dominating or changing life in Oxford is the fact that this enormous Death Star is sitting just 50 miles down the road, growing. And so, you know, why is our average house price now over £450,000? It's because of London. So it's partly these areas that are really, really affected by the fact they're near London. But it would be very interesting to do. I mean, the other thing you can begin to think of doing is using a third dimension and taking London up in some way. But the immediate question would be, if you're going to take London out, why not take the next place out as well?
You could probably argue for London to be taken out because of the fact it's so unique in the UK. Just
yeah.
It's dynamics. The only reason I say it's because basically where I've lived around the southeast places like Basingstoke and
yeah.
From originally around Gatwick.
Yeah.
They're places that have things happening to them and that gets masked. So they would have expanded in 2001 and 2011 in certain aspects.
Yeah.
And that can't see it clearly. And they're interesting because things like network rail, relocating stuff to Basingstoke. So
yeah.
That's an interesting thing. Those mine have lost.
Yeah, you can't see them.
Okay.
Basingstoke has a dry ski slope, I've discovered now, so it's very good. But there's one last other side. Slough, which is nearby, is the one place in Britain which has had the biggest fall in people working in offices, and it's where the office is based. I just thought that's a brilliant census result.
Okay, thanks very much, Danny.